And we head to the sewers for our next film location. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1990 original opens with a decidedly 80s soundtrack and an ominous news report about a crime wave striking New York City.
Much more than just a series of small, isolated incidents, it's now apparent that an organized criminal element is at work. And at the moment, business is good.
As we later discover, a secret society of ninjas called the Foot Clan is orchestrating a very un-ninja-like series of muggings and robberies throughout the Big Apple. Now, the Turtles and the Foot Clan are back in Michael Bay's reboot of the franchise, but according to writer Adam Hofbauer, the differences between the two films offer a telling portrait of how our perceptions of crime have changed over the past 25 years. Adam, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hello.
So let's remember the Foot Clan as depicted in that 1990 original. We're kind of looking at pickpockets and TV thieves dressed as ninjas, right?
We are, which is interesting in that they actually made a change from the original source material in which they were just typical ninjas. That was a change that was brought into the film independently of the original source material.
So you think they were really trying to play on the natural fears that people might have had in New York City about crime at the time?
I think it's a really interesting example of intentional fallacy of maybe authors not really even being aware of what they were tapping into. It's really impossible to tell the full extent of something's relationship with its own time period until sometimes decades have gone by.
Now, the way it plays out in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is almost quaint. We've got one of the main characters, a teenager, is the son of another character. And, you know, he sort of gets wooed, I guess, by the Foot Clan. He gets appropriated into this sort of gang. And their lair is kind of like a skate park slash casino. You know, there's graffiti all over the walls and kids are playing video games and smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, it's what your grandmother would imagine if you had her imagine crime. Even today, they're playing arcade games and they're offered anything they can get. And the worst thing they can think of is to get some free cigarettes, especially in contrast with the recently released reboot. Based on trailers and plot descriptions, it looks to be that the Foot Clan has been updated from just some sort of nunchuck-wielding ninjas to something more resembling a terrorist organization. They walk around in high-tech gear, and instead of assaulting people on train platforms individually, sort of like muggers, they orchestrate what look like sort of large-scale terrorist incursions. Which brings up the irony in that the film from 1990, which was released at the height of crime, depicts crime in an even less intense manner.
Let's hear a quick clip from the trailer for that movie. This is Michael Bay's recent reboot of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Surveillance is showing heavy Foot Clan activity.
They're taking hostages.
Let's rock and roll.
So it's not just the Foot Clan that's changed from the 1990 version to now. You also talk about the Ninja Turtles themselves, that early in the 1990 version, they were sort of a product of a random accident. You know, they stumble upon this canister of green ooze. But today's Ninja Turtles are intentional. They've been engineered. Can you talk a little bit about why that might be?
I think that the reason that is because it appeals to an aspect of reality that fiction can tell us exists, even though it might not. So that if you actually look at the decline of crime rates, there's far too many possible reasons that no one really knows why crime declined, and no one can really expect what shape it will take in the future. And since reality is random and even chaotic to an extent, we compensate for that by making our fiction increasingly intentional.
And that works both ways. So, you know, the villains are kind of destiny villains and the heroes are destined to, you know, appear and defeat them.
Of course. And it's much scarier to realize that the world is kind of rudderless.
Do you think other remakes and reboots, you know, films that are sometimes spanning, you know, two or three decades, they might give us, you know, really surprising windows into how cultural attitudes are evolving over time?
Well, I think this is something that the Ninja Turtles have recently sort of entered they were first created in 1984, so they are, I guess, 30 years old this year.
Yeah.
And they've entered a stage when they've pretty much been in pop culture in one form or the other pretty much for that entire time. Not always in films, not always on television, but in some form of merchandise or publishing. And that when something is around that long, it inevitably morphs and changes to reflect the culture that surrounds it. It might be one of the reasons why comic books are such a powerful cultural touchstone because it's one of the few art forms that is consistently produced. There's been a Superman comic every month since the 1930s, and that's another great example of something that you can look at and really trace pop culture through the changes of these pop characters. And it's something that, given that the Ninja Turtles are far too valuable of a property for the people that have financial stakes in them to let them go pharaoh, we're going to probably see them change just as much as they continue to be ubiquitous, whether anyone's asking for them to be there or not.
Adam Hofbauer is a writer. His article on what the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise can tell us about our own perceptions of crime appeared in The Atlantic, and there's a link at wordofmouthradio.org. Adam, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for talking with me. Go, Ninja! Go, Ninja! Go!